Well, thank you, Bruce. And like I said, thank you for coming. I am Chad Stevens. I work for Campbell Scientific. And I want to talk to you a little bit about psychrometry, thermal couple psychrometry in particular, and how we've been using it over the last little over a year to try and with our new data logger. But really, Campbell's has had a lot longer history with thermocouple psychrometry than just recently. We've had a measurement system called the CR7. We used to take measurements with that routinely, had large systems set up to do that. And even our past president, CEO, not past president, but our past CEO, Paul Campbell, he mentioned, I think, once when you were younger, you used to make thermocouple psychrometers as a kid. So that was... It does run deep in our company. It just makes sense that we would continue to do these types of measurements. To kind of put this into context really quickly, before I came, I did, like Bruce said, I worked for Utah State University, and as a part of my PhD graduate work, I did some stuff in California, and we worked on almond orchards and pistachio orchards, and I was working with the soil. But it was about the same time that they ran into this drought. I'm sure you know about it. There's been a lot of stuff written, talked about the drought in California and other areas. And California, the agriculture in California is very important. I mean, like over 85% of our citrus in the United States comes from California. Over half of our fresh fruits and vegetables come from California as well. It's huge. Agriculture is very big. Over 400 crops in California as well. So it's very important for what we consider in the United States to be, you know, our standard of living for food. California is a very important element of that. But they do have a problem with not having water at times. And in last year, 75% of California received less than 20% of their allocated, they were allocated less than 20% of their surface water. So what do? They start pumping. They also start fallowing a lot of ground. They started ripping out orchards like crazy, sending them to places to, for cogen plants, and ripping them out and just leaving the ground fallow. So I had a friend that he said you'd just cry looking at all these orchards you used to work on. They're gone. So it's interesting what's happening there. But those that are still getting water and those that are still planting, they're trying these crazy ideas. Like, it's not crazy, it really works. But deficit irrigation, of course, is where you don't use the ET models to replenish the water to the crop. You go below that. You stress the plants purposely. You know, 80% of that the plant needed water down to 50%. Some extreme cases, 50% of water. And so, how do you do that? Well, we have to be able to monitor the plant very carefully to do this, because you're right on that tipping point of killing off your orchard. The people who don't take good care and do aggressive deficit irrigation, they lose a lot of trees, and that's expensive. So it's like a pulse, right? You have to measure the pulse of somebody that's in critical care. It's in the hospital. Well, these trees are like in a hospital. They're almost dying, so you need to keep that pulse going. You need to know what's going on with the trees, and that's what the water potential measurements can give you. Water potential, just in case anybody forgets, it's made up in plants. It's turgor pressure, or just pressure in general in the soil. Osmotic potential, matrix potential, and gravity. Really, in plants, turgor pressure and matrix potential make up most of it. And gravity is also a big element. You can see as you go up the tree that it gets more negative, and that's because of that gravity potential. You'll never have water potentials that are higher than what that gravity potential would give you, and that's true. So, thermocouple psychrometry. There's a couple different ways to measure, three that are really direct on the tree that you can measure matrix potential on a tree, or water potential on matrix. Sorry, I'm a soils person. I'm going to say matrix sometimes. I mean water potential. There's three different. One of them is a pressure bomb. If you use pressure bombs, and you're familiar with it. They're great. You throw them in there, you raise the pressure, and you wait until you shoot past it, then you do it again, and then you wait until you shoot past it. And anyway, they're difficult. It doesn't make a lot of sense to use measurements. You have to do it like either pre-dawn measurements or maybe midday measurements, but you always have to take the same measurement all the time. So it's difficult. Taking lots and lots of samples and doing lots of replicates is very difficult with a pressure bomb. The other one is, you know, the shrinking and swelling of the trunks. And so you can put these pressure transducers and look at that shrinking and swelling, and that's a direct measurement from the tree as well, or from the plants. Thermocouple psychrometry, those have been around for a long time. That's the other method, and that's what we've been working with. It was envisioned by Spanner in the 1950s, and really what it is, it's just a thermocouple. You send current backward through it. It creates a wet bulb through Peltier cooling. And it's like a psychrometer that's used to measure relative humidity, a sling psychrometer. But it's really tiny, using very small thermocouples. And after it cools, then it starts measuring that voltage, and you get that as it begins to evaporate. You start getting that wet bulb voltage. We measure it in the microvolts, actually, in the tens and hundreds of microvolts is what we need to measure it, and it's very, very small voltages. And this is not going to make any sense because the font changed. But just so you can see, and trust me on this, in this equation, these don't make any sense, but right here was the relative humidity term. The rest of them are all constants. So relative humidity and water potential are directly related. We'll get past that slide so we don't have to look at it any longer. This is what a psychrometer output usually looks like. This is the typical, or what we want to call the ideal psychrometer output. What happens is the psychrometer cools, and then it ends. After it ends, it begins the condensate forms, and it almost immediately starts to warm up with condensate based on the latent heat of that water. And it gets to this point where the evaporation and that condensation reach an equilibrium. We're going to call that kind of the wet bulb portion. And then it kind of goes along and gets a little bit warmer because of the ambient temperature, and then it dries out and it jumps back and it goes back down to that ambient temperature. And so these are the points that you want to look for. Historically, people have tried to do different algorithms to try to find out where this wet bulb point is. They'll do a lines and tangent lines and try to track it down. And for an ideal psychrometer, it works okay for that. And it works okay. But there's problems with psychrometers. And really, if they work perfectly, and they were then everybody would be using them. And the fact is, not a lot of people are using them. We have a lot of problems with psychrometers, primarily that people think that the equipment's expensive, it's difficult to look at or to figure out what's going on. It takes a bit of expertise to use it. And other problems is that really these psychrometers need to be calibrated individually. They are all unique. Each one has its own individual evaporation trend line. Certain psychrometers, I'm going to show you in just a second, they can only accept a certain amount of cooling current. And some can accept more and some can accept less. And it's because of these thermocouple junctions, because when they make them, they're welded. And that little bead where they're welded, it's unique. So each sensor is going to have its own little unique characteristic. And here's three psychrometers. These psychrometers were in the exact same water potential with the exact same cooling current. And they're just different types of psychrometers. And I'm going to show you really quick. This one is kind of that ideal psychrometer. It's a pretty good one. It was made by Westcor. This one is made by J.D. Merrill. And you'll notice it got wetter than the other ones. It took a little bit longer to dry. But its peak right about here where that plateau is about the same. So they're measuring the same, but they did look different. And getting an algorithm or a logger or something to automate this and to measure where that point is, it's a little difficult. The other point is this one right here. This one was a little bit smaller thermocouple. It was small. And when we sent this 9 milliamp current to it, we got joule heating. And that's when it cools it, but at the same time it's heating it up because of all the current sending through it. And so what happened is it got some moisture on there. As soon as we released that current, it started to evaporate and started trying to reach up to that wet bulb temperature, but it never made it before it dried out. And that's a mistake. That's a problem with thermocouples. You can't send too much current to them or it causes errors. There's other problems as well. The temperature between the wet bulb and the dry bulb temperature, if you get temperature drift, you know, it's just the whole, all your ambient, all that temperature just keeps moving up. Maybe, you know, you're getting some heating from the sun. These are some examples of that. The blue line, actually, it's cooling. It's gone from a warmer to a cooler. The red is getting warmer. You'll notice the errors right there in that wet bulb. You'll notice that. What we changed, and the way to get around this is what we did on the blue line. We minimized the amount of time that we cooled it. We sent the maximum cooling rate to the psychrometer, and we did it for the shortest amount of time that we could with the expected range of the psychrometer that we want to get out. And what that did is that minimized that time for that drift to ever occur. And so we're actually really close to the measurement, even though there was a significant drift going on. Other sources of error that you run into are temperature gradients. The temperature gradients, we can work around insulating, putting thermal coverings around the psychrometers. It works out. In the soil, you can put them down, put several feet of cabling under the ground before they come out. And it really does help keep the thermal gradients and the thermal from going down the cable and changing. Condensation is the death of psychrometers. You get condensate in the chambers or around them, and it just kills your measurement. It basically turns into zero. So how do you fix that? Well, make a psychrometer, make it heated. Heat the chamber of the psychrometer to dry it out before you take a measurement. Another thing to do is you just have to, if you don't have a heated chamber, you can wait a long time, or you can go out there and just manually dry it out yourself. It's kind of a pain. Heated psychrometer would be a great idea. Vapor pressure gradient, that's something that normally you only have if you're sealing it up, but that can cause a lot of issues as well as poor sample temperature, not being able to take a very good sample temperature. IECT has a psychrometer where they measure the sample. It's called the S psychrometer, and then the C, and it's out in the chamber. And then you put a thermocouple right on the xylem material of a branch. And it does a pretty good job. The problem is they only last for a couple days before some phloem material hits that psychrometer, messes it up, and they have to go and clean it out. So the idea for a new design would be using a thermopile and looking and taking a measurement of that temperature with a thermopile directly on the sample. So these are some of the things that we're working on, and this is how we can overcome the issues that have really kept a lot of people away from it. What we've been doing this on is our CR6 logger, and it's kept the cost low, but it's also kept, we've been able to change the current on the fly. For every sensor can have its own current, and we can also do that with the timing. And adjust that on the fly as well, so that the algorithms can work with that. And that's what we've been working on with that. So with that, I will, if there's questions or anything like that. Right. In fact, right here, these are the places where you can buy thermocouples.
Oh, there it is.
Yes. Okay. Notice Campbell Scientific does not make a thermocouple.
Are these
psychrometers? These are the ones. Westcor and JRD Merrill. ICT. I've not used theirs on our system, but it's a four wire system, and so we could measure those as well.
Some
designs do work better than others. Yeah. We're able to measure those in like the tens of nanovolts, which is with low noise, and it's pretty remarkable.
Great.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.